Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro of the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Welcome to another episode of Into the Fray. Whether you're new to the show or have been listening to me for years, if you would be so kind to take a few moments and rate and review the show on your listening platform of choice, that would be amazing. That helps it fall upon more ears, which in turn encourages more people with experiences to reach out to me. The latest releases over at patreon.com include 3 different live chats that total over 6 hours. Yes, they got that lively. These include Subterranean Strangeness and 2 editions of Demons and Darkness with John Paul Capice. Those 2 episodes essentially turned into Ask Me Anything sessions with ITF's resident demonologist. So huge thanks to JP for joining the patrons and I for those epic chats. JP will actually be returning in October for a special Halloween edition live chat as well. New patrons over at patreon.com include Graham, Snowy Sand, Rusty Brockman, and Peggy Curtis. Welcome over. And alpha shoutouts, these are folks pledging $20 or more a month over at patreon.com. Sandra Sandgren, Matt Schultz, Brian McCahey, Brad Ward, Mike Archer, Chris Guerrero, Patrick Ray, David Otto, Matthew Lacewell, Ted Cheever, Jake Dressel, Heather Stockwell, Steve Alarcon, John, William Cornell II, Roy Daniel, Randy, and Randy's actually a cross-country alpha, Tyler DeMoney, Sticky Soundzine, Karina, Eric Ribich, Josh Arthur, Andrew of Black Triangle Coffee, Maynard W., Azriel, and Sean Kevin Jason. A huge thanks to each and every one of my patrons, no matter your level. I do not take it lightly that you guys spend a single dollar on me and my work for ITF. And if you appreciate what I do and the work that goes into the show, head over to patreon.com and search Into the Fray or click on the Linktree link in any of my social media bios. And in return, you get a boatload and still expanding library of extra content to consume. So, patreon.com/Into the Fray. So the weather is cooling down a bit, and a few leaves are falling to the ground, right? Well, maybe in a few places. Sounds to me like a perfect time to add a new, creepy goodness-filled podcast into your fall rotation. Enter Jim Harold's Campfire. This podcast finds Jim talking to real people with real experiences for 90 minutes every week. They run the spooky gamut just like ITF. Cryptids, UFOs, hauntings, and general high strangeness that you just can't wrap your head around. I think this will quickly find a home amongst your other favorites. Some of the latest episodes feature a very haunted hotel, a message from beyond the grave, and an entire episode dedicated to shadow people. So do me a favor and follow Jim Harold's Campfire on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to Into the Fray. So this is edition 3 for Eerie Appalachia.
Reporting on Flatwoods Monster Day. How cool is this?
Oh my goodness, I didn't even realize. It's, yes, we are.
Yeah, September 12th.
Oh goodness gracious. All hail Flatwoods Monster.
Yeah, Braxy, we love you.
You know what? That museum there is amazing. Andrew Smith is a wonderful person.
The whole
town. Yes.
Just embraces it, you know, with the chairs at all the spots and everything. And then The Spot, which is the great little restaurant there.
Yes.
Get your UFO calzone.
Yeah, The Spot. Yeah, we also stopped there right by one of the famous Flatwoods Monster chairs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we've got our Tampa tie to it now. That's I had the report of that plane that got scrambled that morning in Tampa Bay for an unidentified object. And the plane crashed due to training accident, but the flight is redacted. There is the entire report is redacted. The family, the two pilots, the pilot and the trainee, are buried in Arcadia, Florida, and the families had no knowledge of what happened. For years, they told them there weren't any bodies, that they fell in the drowned in the Gulf, but then they, you know, sent them the bodies and said, oh no, it was a crash, but it was a classified training operation.
Oh, that's terrible.
And now, but we still don't know what it was. So, you know, the theory is that they went up and tagged something, and that's what crashes in Braxton County, West Virginia, a few hours later.
Now, is that normal in a training accident report? At least what they're calling a training accident report, to have things redacted?
No, not at all. And the other weird thing about it is they had flown from Pensacola to MacDill in Tampa, which was their training operation. Why were they scrambled? That is redacted too. But we do know there was reports of an identified craft that was south in Port Charlotte Harbor, which is down Fort Myers area. And then suddenly Tampa scrambles a half hour later. Okay, it's not hard to put two and two together, but again, we don't have definitive anything. So we're hoping with declassification, eventually we might get the whole story, but it's still a long way to go. It's a reach, I admit, but there's a cover up, you know, where there's smoke.
Yeah, the fact that they were scrambled and then you have the... Oops, no, just kidding. We've had the bodies the whole time. Here you go. That's horrible for the family, first off. That is horrible for them to do. And obviously very strange.
Yep, very, very much.
Well, today we've got four more tales, encounters, stories from Eerie Appalachia Edition 3. And we're going to start out in Lewisburg, Virginia, and this is the Greenbrier Ghost.
Yeah, well, Lewisburg, West Virginia, we've got to talk to, who I'll be speaking with this weekend at the Monument Festival, is the wonderful Dave Spinks, is probably one of the great experts on this subject, because he's actually done investigations at the house that is involved in this story, because the ghost is still there. So this is a January in 1897, a young boy who did chores for the Shue family came to their home, and at the bottom of the stairs, he finds the body of Zona Shue, and she is lying there dead, and he runs for help. He found his mother, and then they went and informed the husband, Edward Shue, who was working at the blacksmith shop, that his wife had passed away. And he runs home and he's just inconsolable. The local doctor is called in, Dr. Knapp, and who is also acting coroner. Edward is just so distraught that he cannot let her out of his arms. His lovely bride is just dead. Nap concludes that, she died of an everlasting faint, which, you know, now we would pretty much probably call that a heart attack, right? So again, the body was prepared for burial, and the husband, so distraught, he puts, you know, he's there with her. He lovingly holding her head and stroking her hair. He puts this, her favorite scarf around her neck to help her rest easier. It was her favorite, and she must be buried with this. So they brought her for display at her home, because this is what you do, is you sit up with the dead. You have your, you know, there weren't like funeral homes we have now. You know, you did it at the house, and he stayed by her side the whole time. And then as the family came to visit, he was there at the head of the casket the whole time. She was buried at the cemetery, and everyone was just, it was such, so tragic. A few weeks pass. This lady, Miss Heaster, who is the mother of Zona, says she'd been visited by the spirit of her daughter. And she said that her husband was not the loving, kind man, that he was cruel and violent. And he had attacked her and broken her neck. And she also said that Edward wasn't even really his name. His name was Trout. You know, what a weird word, Trout. So Mary and her brother-in-law go to the prosecutor and say, "I've been visited by a ghost. My sister, you know, my daughter was killed." You know, and he's like, "You know, my sister-in-law was killed." He's like, "I can't go by the word of a ghost, but maybe there's some questions." So he did call up the doctor. And the doctor said, "All right, maybe I didn't give her the best examination because the husband wouldn't leave her alone." And he did notice that she had taken unusual care. He had taken unusual care of her. So then they start looking into the thing and find out Edward Shue was actually a guy named Erasmus Shue, and he was known as Trout. And he had two previous wives. And both of them had died under mysterious circumstances under his other name. First wife died of a broken neck. Imagine that, when she fell from a haystack. And then the second wife died while he was building a chimney and he dropped a heavy rock on her head by accident. So this, with all this information, the prosecutor now orders an examination of the body. And Trout, Edward was like, "No, you can't do this. She would not allow this." And then when they finally dig her up, he even says, "I know I'll be arrested, but they're not going to be able to prove I did it." Well, the autopsy did provide the proof they needed. Her neck was broken. Her windpipe was crushed. And on her throat were finger marks from where she'd been strangled. So, of course, the community wanted to hang him on the spot. And of course, the newspapers at the time made it a point to show that it was the discovery of his history and his name, and that the ghost legend had nothing to do with his conviction. But he did serve life in prison, where he died later at Moundsville State Prison. There is now a highway marker just a few miles from Zona's grave that summarizes her story as the Greenbrier Ghost. So it is on State Historical Marker that you can visit. It's near the town of Smoot, West Virginia. And then you can also go visit her grave, which the stone has been replaced several times because people like to do bad things and take, you know, relics and stuff like that. So, but thankfully now it's a pretty hefty stone and it's protected. But you know, she's a folklore hero. She came back from the dead to, you know, convict her husband of her own murder. And it is the only documented case that's officially happened. So even though the newspapers say it wasn't, but it was. So we love Zona.
Yeah, go Zona. get after it. I mean, you can't let that guy get away with that, right? So, yeah, when I read this, it reminded me of, well, I guess this is mind the Petersons. No offense to Petersons out there, but these two cases came right to mind because I was just watching some true crime stuff lately, binging that, and it's Michael Peterson from the Staircase, right? His wife ended up at the bottom of the stairs. She ended up dying, but then they ended up, you know, you're into that and you're wondering, oh gosh, did he do that? I don't know. But come to find out, his previous wife, she died at the bottom of the staircase too. Weird. And then there's Drew Peterson. Head scratcher. So then you're kind of going, well, two wives in a row falling down staircases and dying. That's kind of, I don't know what the odds are of that, but they can't be good. And then there's Drew Peterson, who is an ex police officer of all things, and two wives for him as well. You know what? There's another Peterson. I'm not even maybe the biggest one that everybody might know because of the fact that his wife was pregnant was Scott Peter. Wow. Okay. That's three Petersons. That's kind of creepy on that. Now that I'm saying that, really mind the Petersons now. So, anyways, I was kind of waiting in the story. I'm like, maybe his real name is Peterson somewhere in there. But,
No, he was, but Trout, what an odd name to be called, but you know, it's late 1800s. So, you know, everybody had weird nicknames. So it was only a short while later, we had all the gangster nicknames, like where everybody has the nickname, you know, like Jimmy the Fish, Frank the Squid. Yeah.
Yeah. The Iceman. Definitely want to try to avoid that one.
Yeah.
Yikes. Yeah. And we had a George Knapp in that story. His first name was George. So there you go.
George. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, next we are moving to Jackson, Kentucky, and we're going to talk about the Rat Man.
Okay, now I do have to do my little pre-talk on this one. This was the one place I went where, when I was researching it, that this was the one place where I had a few moments of, am I welcome here? Most other places, yeah, I was invited by a family member or something to tell their ghost story, tell their incident, or tell their encounter, and you know, and to document these great, you know, stories that are being lost to history now. You know, these, you know, the grandmas, the meemaws, and the peepaws are passing away. These stories are going away. But this is the first one I went to where one of the ladies came out after she found out what I was learning about. She came out of the house next door with a gun and said, I need to leave.
Oh.
This is one Carrie didn't join me on because she was taking care of spiders. Imagine that. So of all the other stories I investigated, this one was the only one that I had that issue with.
Did she actually raise the gun at you?
No, just was over the shoulder. Wow. You know, was like, I think you should leave.
The old shotgun.
You know, we don't want to talk about this. You know, it was not pointed at me, but there was a reason she went and got it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I did, I made my goodbyes and talked to the family members that had invited me again separately. They met me just outside of the holler, but anyway, Jackson, Kentucky, there was a creature that lives there, or maybe he's a woodsman or a trapper or something, but he's called the Rat Man, and he would help those in the area by showing them flora and fauna that was safe to eat and safe to travel in. And he also acted as a go-between for the native tribes and the settlers in the area, the early settlers to the area. He was the one who could make deals and make things happen. They called him the Rat Man because he apparently had rat-like features. One day, he decides, you know, he's been living out in the woods a little long and he's lonely. So he sees the local pastor's daughter, and everybody's afraid to date her because, you know, she's the pastor's daughter. You know, you can't have that. But so he's taken with her. So he starts asking to court her. And of course, the pastor and the family, you know, want nothing to do with this creepy man of the woods. You know, this ain't happening. You know, she needs to be married to a proper boy, you know, in town or something. So when he got forced away, he went back to his local native tribe and asked their shaman to curse the family. We don't know 100% what happened there, but we do know that people in that valley, in that holler, leave presents for the rat man at a pile of stones at the mouth of the holler. Otherwise, crops will fail, animals will be taken, strange things will occur, you know. And he is seen coming to his offering place, picking up his offerings, and he wears tattered robes. He likes bottles and caps and shows up on supposedly the blue moons, you know, the blue moon of Kentucky, right? And there's other legends that he is like a werewolf where he turns into a rat. Others say it's not the trapper, but it was the priest who was cursed because he wouldn't allow the man to marry. And so that it's the priest who is the creature. There's another version where it's the child of the trapper and the priest, his daughter, that is, you know, the creature that shows up and takes the offerings. But there's a flip side to this, that if you do leave the offerings for him, not only does he, you know, protect your land, he might grant you a boon. He might help you. There were stories that the city actually had an official place behind the city hall where you could leave offerings for a little while in, you know, in Jackson, Kentucky. Now, I could not find any place that fit the description. I could not find any historical document that said that that really happened. But more than a few of the families I talked to said, oh, no, we used to do it, you know, once a year behind the old city hall. I couldn't find where it could possibly be behind city hall. But I did see the rock shrine. It's a little further off the road. You're not just going to see it driving down the road there. And then every few months they say that they leave some bottles and trinkets and they're not there come the following morning. So just to be on the safe side, and they haven't had any crops fail or any livestock go missing in a little while. So
this woman that came out with the shotgun, why do you think she was so upset? Is that because, is there some kind of part to this legend where just talking about him would bring his wrath, or in, you know, in some way, some kind of a bad luck situation on her and her family?
Well, one of the things I didn't put into the story because it was one I was unable to confirm was that some of the people, like, he's like a, since he's such a local figure and such a local legend, that they kind of worship him a little bit.
Mm.
So is there like a cult of the Rat Man? Not really, but when I started asking some questions along those lines, that's when I apparently crossed the line, because I had heard some stories from one of the other families that this was a thing. These were things that happened, and we, you know, need to document and need to discuss. And it's like, oh, okay, I think I crossed the line here by suggesting that. So at least that's what it seemed to me. That's what that was, the right then was when I stirred her up. So, and I apologized profusely. I didn't have her contact info or anything, but I, you know, the family members I did talk to have said, you know, they've tried to smooth things over with her, but she's just like, you shouldn't be talking about Ratman. You know, Ratman is, they're going to make fun of you. And I'm like, no, that's the whole point, is we want to keep these stories. We want to share them so that people understand there's some reverence here. There's something to this. The families really seriously want to be protected, and this is real to them. And who's to say it isn't? They've prospered in this valley. So
more than likely, she was just worried that you were going to just completely decimate the story and make fun of it.
Right. Yeah. And you know, they have every right to believe that, because look what happened to Hopkinsville.
Yeah.
You know, when Hopkinsville happened, which is not too far from there, the family has a severe incident. Some crazy stuff happened. And then their farm is flooded with visitors trying to, you know, see the moon men, see the, you know, the crazy things. So that the farm can't be planted for a few years, because so many people are trampling the fields. So they start charging a quarter apiece to these people who are destroying their livelihood because they got to make a living. And then everybody's, oh, they did it for the money. They did it for this, and start making fun of them. And that's one of the reasons why we have these terrible stigmas about these things, where we can't talk about them because, you know, the outsiders will make fun of us. And I'm trying to break that. I'm trying to say, hey, look, we understand these are things we don't understand. They have rules. You know, this is like Robert the Doll down in Key West. There's rules. We don't understand them. So we, you know, but we, if you follow them, you know, you're good. So why those rules are in place, who knows? Someday we'll figure it out.
Yeah, but you don't want to figure it out by seeing a light in the woods and all of a sudden it's a campfire with a bunch of people around it. And hey, there's the Rat Man himself, just, you know, and everybody. And maybe there is a cult out there around the Rat Man. I mean, if you have to appease some creature or person or otherworldly being, and that's what you have to do, then, you know, there are some that believe that.
Yeah, and that's what you got to be careful about. So, you know, so that's why one of the rules is don't go alone. I broke my own rule, but that was, I didn't think anything of it. It was just one of those, hey, you know, Carrie and I'll just run in and, oh, Carrie can't come today. No problem. I've got three stops and this is the last stop before I head home. And because we have a little base camp up there in the woods of Kentucky that we, you know, we family land that we branch out of. And that's what I was, just one day I was like, hey, I got this today. You're good. And well, I almost paid the price. I don't think I was ever in any real danger, but I realized I was on the verge of something.
Well, and Carrie's probably with you, what, 98-99% of the time?
Most of the time. Yeah, exactly. There's a few, you know, where she's not, but that is the rare exception because she wants to be there to get the feel of the place, to get the, so she can draw it better and all that. And, you know, and that was also one of the ones we decided, you know what, maybe we won't do an illustration of this one because there wasn't really a documented, oh, he's a man who turns into a rat. That's what, right, we originally went looking for. But then we found out, oh no, that was just his name. He was a trapper, and, you know, and they called him the Rat Man because he had rat-like features. And then, oh, well, no, it was the child who turned into a rat. And it's, you know, it's all these different variants. And again, you start looking into the history in the area, there's nothing. This is one of those ones, there's no newspaper articles, there's no records that point to any of this. This is one of those just early settler stories that I could not find the historical precedent.
Cool story. Really like that one.
Yeah, I love these. Those are the ones that intrigue me the most. I love it when I can figure them out. It's like, oh, this is why this is here. But these are the ones that get me. These are the ones that it's like, you know, this, the bone lady in Quebec, my personal monster, the bench leg in Louisa. You know, these are the stories that just like, yes, give me more of these, please. And if you have any, please email me, mark@eerieflorida.com. And I'm happy to talk about your holler monster in a future volume of our works.
Well, and that's why I love your book so much, because it is full of what are usually some of my favorite things on the planet when it comes to cryptids and the paranormal, and that is one-offs.
Yes. Well, I like it when they reoccur, too. Like, this was one mm-hmm. that was back again and again and again and hundreds of years, and he's still seen. So is it a descendant? Is this thing immortal? Is it a ghost? Is it a spirit? Is it a, you know, some sort of entity? Is it quantum entangled? Who, you know, it, you know, there's some science behind this, maybe. We just don't know.
Well, I love how certain regions produce these one-offs that, I mean, and by one-off, I just mean it's in that region only. There's maybe a handful of people in some cases, which is really amazing, that know the story really, really well. And it's been passed on generation to generation. And maybe nobody really outside of that knows all of the details until you get there and you write about it, and then we get to read about it.
Exactly. And so many of these, like I said, are dying out. Some of these families, you know, the kids today don't care. They're playing on the phone and, you know, moving away and, you know, where the jobs are now. So some of these family farms are dying out. And then who knows what story is dying out with them and what creature may no longer have its offering and may cause other problems. You know, there's a reason we have shows like Missing 411, Yeah, and stuff like that.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In this next segment, I think that I've covered it just in a peripheral way, just it's come up, but I don't know that I've actually ever fully covered this. So I'm glad that we're doing this today. And that is the Snallygaster from South Mountain, yes. Maryland.
Yes, Snally out of Frederick County, Maryland. This is a holler monster that made it big. You know, we love it when the holler monsters do make it out of their holler and become big things. That's, you know, Mothman, that's Jersey Devil, that's Popelik Monster. These are holler monsters that spread, you know, spread their wings, as it were. And Snally, oh my gosh, is one of my favorite stories. I loved researching him because it's such a crazy creature, right? Carrie had so much fun reading all the descriptions and trying to decide which one to use for the illustration, because we went back, you know, that's what we do, is we go back to the OG, right? We go back to the original reports and the original newspaper articles. And if we can't get an actual witness, we're going to go back to as close to the source as we can. So this is definitely, you know, way back. It's part bird, part dragon, maybe has metallic parts. It could be similar to the Thunderbirds legends of old, and it would swoop down on prey and pick them up into the sky, including children, not just animals. This thing attacked people. And the name comes from the German immigrants in the area, where they called it the Schnellergeist, which basically means quick spirit in English. But of course, this is early 1700s, and, you know, a bird with demonic features, and people can't quite pronounce Schnellergeist. So it becomes Snallygast, or Snallygaster, and it has tentacles coming out of its mouth, and it could drain the blood from its victims. And it was just basically the monster in the woods. It was their Bigfoot. It was their, you know, don't go in the woods. The Snallygaster will get you. The Snallygeist will get you, for hundreds of years. And this predates America. You know, this is early, you know, settlers talked about this thing until 1909, when suddenly the newspapers print its sighting. And basically 1909, between February and March, there are dozens of stories with frequent sightings of the creature, described as having the long pointed bill, claws made of steel, and one giant eye in the middle of its forehead. Now, if you know your Native American lore, you know, that fits Thunderbird or the Great Serpent, which Serpent Mound's not that far from there, and all this. One article claimed a man was picked up by it and was killed from being drained of blood and dropped his body on the hillside as it flew away. Hunters were shooting at it and said, oh, we could hit it. We know we hit it, but wasn't hurt. So this hits all over. And so the Smithsonian offers a reward of, at that time, a princely sum of $10,000 if you will find and kill this creature. And my favorite monster hunter of all time, President Theodore Roosevelt, he actually nearly postponed a diplomatic trip overseas because he wanted to hunt the creature personally. And the main reason he wanted to hunt it was because Napoleon's nephew, who was living in America, said he shot the creature with a cannonball and it bounced off. And so Teddy's like, well, we can't have that. We can't have a Frenchman taking out our monster. I have to be the one to do it.
Huzzah to that.
Bully. Bully. I love Teddy. Anyway, although, you know, he's pretty much considered a Northeast creature, but he traveled all throughout the Appalachians. We've got newspaper accounts everywhere in those early 1900s. One lady said she got away. She was in Scrabble, West Virginia, and she managed to get away by diving into a barn. And then in nearby Sharpsburg, which is not far from there, this farmer claimed that he saw it roosting in his barn on top of a giant egg. So it had a baby. It's seen a few times in Ohio, and then it finally comes back to Maryland where its last sighting dies off. And several of the sightings talk about giant eggs everywhere. And then everybody hears it flying overhead and screeching like a giant hawk, a loud shriek that they could not, you know, believe came from a living creature. Nowadays, I'm sure it's a Jurassic Park style sound, right? So how was this a hoax? How was this faked? So many people saw it. Were people just cashing in on the legend? No, the newspapers didn't pay people at these times and everything. Were the newspapers making it up? If you were a competing newspaper, you'd love to debunk this, right? This, you know, so some of it was probably some yellow journalism, but some of it would have been these people told these stories and there were multiple witnesses. Then, you know, so it disappears. And then suddenly 20 years later, it pops back up and it's all over the newspapers again in the late 20s. More sightings in the same area. So some researchers of this think maybe that's the gestational period for those eggs. You know, maybe that's how long it takes for the next generation to grow big enough to be seen and come out of the hills and the mines or wherever it nests. And then most famously during Prohibition, supposedly the FBI found one in a moonshine vat. And that's where they caught it and killed it. And that's one that was supposedly taken to the Smithsonian. We don't have any real records of it other than a story from a newspaper in Pennsylvania that says that this happened. And so another 20 years pass in the 40s. Was it seen? Yes, there are some accounts, but no newspapers covered it at this time because it was right at the end of World War II. What's going to make the headlines? A flying giant lizard creature or end of World War II? 1970s, no reports, sadly. 1990s, there's a couple reports, but we're coming up. The 2019s, 2020s, we're due. So is Snally ready to pop out again? I don't know, but he's such a cool creature. And again, he affected such a wide area. We're not talking one holler, one valley. And so many famous people admitting they saw this. You know, famous people didn't have to admit they saw a monster. They were already famous. So.
Well, and the report of it being taken to the Smithsonian, you know, this isn't the first time we've heard the Smithsonian mentioned when it comes to cryptids, probably especially, you know, giants, other things. It just makes you think of like that scene from, I think it was the latest, well, not five, but four Indiana Jones, where he goes into that massive hangar area, and it's where they have the Ark of the Covenant and all these cool things. You know, it just makes you wonder, like, what do they really have?
Area 51
down in the old basement.
I still think Wright Patterson's where they actually keep all that stuff.
Right.
So keep it in plain sight, man. Nobody ever thinks about that. Don't hide it in your hidey place. Put it right in the main buildings, and no one will ever look.
Keep it secret. Keep it safe. Yeah. Because exactly. Sarah Cooper has the Snallygaster Museum. I think it's in Liberty.
Yes.
Liberty Town. Have you guys been there?
We did not get to make it there. We were trying so hard, but it was just a little too far on one of our trips, and we had stopped at a couple too many amazing places on the way. So that's on the agenda for this fall. So we're hoping to go back up there for, you know, more research in November for, you know, a future project that shall remain nameless at this point. But I pretty much, you can guess it's a follow up to this. But we've got some more monsters to talk about and interview people about. So, and hopefully even more after these podcasts and radio shows and TV shows come out, we can get some more people emailing us and saying, hey, I got a monster we want to share. But yeah, that's on the agenda. So, because we got to get there, and we got to get to the Hodag Museum too, just for fun.
Yeah, I think it's so great that she put that together. That's always been on my list to go visit Sarah and her museum. So, all right. Well, yes. Last but not least, we have Old Pete from Rutledge, Tennessee.
Okay, now this is another one. It wasn't as crazy as the Rat Man, but when I would ask people about this, there were people who were like, no, I don't want to talk about Pete. And it's like, oh, okay. Or the man. They would just call him the man. So Rutledge, Tennessee is not far from the heart of the Smoky Mountains, with Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg, just not too far away. So you can go to Dollywood, you can go to the Mysterious Mansion in Gatlinburg, have all kinds of fun. My favorite place in Pigeon Forge is Alcatraz East, where they have one of the largest collections of true crime. You were mentioning true crime earlier. It used to be the Crime Museum in Washington, D.C., but now it's in Tennessee. And it's got Ted Bundy's car, and it's got Gacy paintings and Kaczynski's typewriter. I mean, you're talking everything you can imagine there. So if you're looking for a fun trip, you know, definitely head there. Not what you expect in the heart of the mountains of Tennessee. But if you go a little ways away, you come to the small little community of Rutledge. And this is basically a mountain area. And it's mostly not very inhabited because it's in the middle of the Smokies. But because of the tourist area nearby, it's modern life's coming into the area. A lot of Airbnbs are popping up. But there is someone there that, and he has big dog named Old Pete. And the dog is just this giant cross between like a bloodhound and a pit bull, as it was described to me. And, you know, as big as a mule. Everybody I talked to about this, I mean, everybody, even the guys who sent me this originally and were excited to talk about it, when we actually talked about it, it was like a whisper. We didn't want to bring him up. It was crazy. It's like, yo, we don't really want to talk about him too loud. So let's go inside. Let's get inside and let's turn the radio on. And so that way, you know, it's literally felt like we were breaking some sort of taboo talking about Old Pete, right? And they wouldn't call him. They didn't talk much about the man. It was always about the dog. And like we talked about on the last one, where, you know, the deal at the crossroads, right? This is something similar. These are, he made, the man there made a deal with the Cherokee to protect the valley. And in exchange, and he would protect the wildlife from the from the incoming European settlers. But in exchange, they granted him long life, and they gave him the dog to guard him. And the dog was possessed by the spirit of a Manitou, some other great creature. And the creature would grant wishes. But, of course, anything with a wish has a price. And so the greater wish you asked for, the greater the cost. What you would do is you would go to the old man and say, I need to talk to Pete, or Old Pete. And then he would bring out the dog. And then you would ask the dog your favor that you would request. And then you would make an offering. And if the offering is enough, the dog would eat the offering. That would be it. You know, and then you would get your wish. But if you didn't offer enough, the dog would take his pound of flesh, literally. Could be your hand, could be a finger, could be your foot, could be your life, right? So when I started asking about this, like, one family member mentioned that they needed a bit of money. So they asked for a small loan. And that was easy enough. They had to give up an heirloom, a little family locket. And it worked. Nobody got hurt. And the dog apparently ate the locket. That was how they got their money for their homestead. Another family talked about someone was dying and they really did not want them to die. In exchange, they brought their prize hound and Pete took care of the other hound. They go on from there. I mean, that's like the base level, right? There was one that there was a feud between a couple families and one family wanted the other family gone. He granted the wish, but it cost them the youngest children in their own family. So, you know, how badly do you want somebody gone to do that? But they gained another farm and expanded their land. So, of course, people try to break the deals or try to fool them. And one of the people I talked to said, you know, his great uncle, who was not thought of well in the family, one point tried to get a boon, offered up his neighbor's dog, saying it was his own. But Pete wasn't fooled and ate both his legs. And it was because he had wished for work boots. So, yeah, so there's some irony there, right? That's they made certain he didn't need boots, right? So now what they were saying to me is most of the people who talked about him, the last time he was mentioned is like the 1960s. But if that's the case, he would have been like 200 years old around then. And I can't imagine what that is in dog years, right? For old Pete. But the people in the area say, oh, he's gone now. You know, that's just an old tale in the holler. But man, they were talking about him in hushed tones, like he was still listening and ready to pounce. Like the dog was going to come out and demand a price or something like that. So it fits a couple Irish legends, and the Appalachians are the same mountains as the Scottish Highlands and some of Ireland, just separated, you know, over time. So is he a transplanted Bargist or one of the black dog legends out there? We, in the book, we talk about the snarly yowl, which is a similar creature, but it was the whole wishing thing and the price to pay and that you had to guess price. That's what made this story stand out to me so much. And the fact that these people were genuinely spooked talking about this, like this was a family story that is passed down from generations, but we don't like to talk about it. Right. So chills. It's just.
So the Manitou is essentially a shape shifter. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's something from beyond, right? It's hard to describe when you talk native lore. It's not lore to them. This is their life. This is just part of nature to them. And these things from beyond, you know, from the happy hunting grounds, some call it, you know, or the spirit realm. That's just the way life is. And these things just come from there. And the Manitou are usually cursed souls that are wandering that area that want back into our world at any cost. So the closest we would have is calling them demons. So they were, you know, if you were possessed of one, a Manitou got hold of you, you know, there were certain rituals they could do to help you get rid of it. But if an animal got a Manitou in it, you pretty much had to put it down. There was nothing to be done. But if this was a creature that and a Manitou had merged, yes, we're talking like a shapeshifter. We're talking like, you know, I don't want to say skinwalker because then immediately you're thinking Navajo and West, and that's true. They didn't have those legends amongst the Cherokee and, you know, and the, you know, the other tribes of the area. This is something completely different. This is, you know, the Manitou are, it's again, another thing they talk of in hushed tones. And even then, Manitou is more of a Western term as well. They didn't really have a term for it, but that was as close as I could get from the few natives that were willing to talk about it. And even then, most of them hadn't heard of Old Pete. The Cherokee did talk about the man who did help them deal with the moon-eyed people, and he had a great beast of a hound that would kill the moon-eyed people, which are basically large-eyed fairy that the Cherokee went to war against and destroyed in somewhere in the Appalachians. And it's in their histories.
Well, all I know is Erie, Appalachia has wonderful regional stories in it. It is chock full. I know that everybody's probably going, is there anything left in the book to read? You've had three editions and we normally cover around three or four stories per episode. Yes, there are plenty more stories in there for you guys to discover and read that we have not spoiled on these last three editions. But Mark, thank you so much for coming on once again, and say hello to Carrie for me, please. But yeah, tell everybody before you go though, where to find you guys, your YouTubes, your Instagram, and of course, yep, where to find the books.
Well, we will be at the Mothman Festival this Saturday. So there this Saturday, if you want to come out, our books are at the Mothman Museum because we got a whole chapter on Mothman. And like you said, we're barely scratching the surface. This book hits quite a bit. But you can find us at erieflorida.com is the old classic for all the Florida books. But we also have Appalachia there. But you can also find us at erietravels.com since we're now out of the state. That's also where my local TV show down here in Tampa Bay called Erie Travels airs on Channel 52 in Pasco. Our Area 52 TV, they call it now. They've rebranded themselves. And you can find that online on YouTube under Erie Travels. And you'll see me there, and one of Carrie's illustrations for the logo. And we air every Friday. We've done 10 episodes so far. We took a little breather for the summer because the summer is hot. But we'll be starting again shortly after Mothman Festival. So starting in October, new episodes. But you can find our books anywhere that books are sold. We're at every Walgreens and CVS in Florida, but you can find our new book a lot of places wherever books are sold. But if you order direct from us at erieflorida.com or erietravels.com, Carrie will be happy to draw a little something in it, and I'll be happy to write some words of wisdom for you so you can get it signed. And it doesn't cost too much more than ordering it off the major places.
Always worth it to get a unique drawing from the very talented Carrie Schultz Muncy. Well, thanks again, Mark. You guys have a wonderful weekend.
Oh, yes. And wish you were there, but we will see you at Small Town Monsters Festival.
Yes.
Early next year, right?
Oh,
100%. So we will see you there. Yeah, if you go to our website, you'll see all our appearances this fall. We're on a lot of things. If you have Travel Channel or Discovery Plus, September 30th for their Ghosttober, we're kicking it off with the Shock Doc Curse of Robert the Doll down here in Key West. And I got to film that back in February, and that will be on there as well. So you can see when we brought Robert the Doll back into the artist's house for the first time in 30 years.
Ooh.
Yeah, I had to keep an NDA on that till just last week. So,
you were probably dying to talk about that, or just
bring it up. I've been
wanting
to talk about it for a year and a half.
Oh my gosh.
I'm a talking head in it, but I also narrated quite a bit of it.
Oh, that's great. Congratulations.
Yeah, we'll see what made the cut soon. I'm excited. So.
Well, yeah, big congrats on that. Anything having to do with Robert the Doll is always a hit.
Yeah, we got to take him out of the cabinet,
wow,
and back home to his old house,
oh, wow,
and up into the turret room in the attic. And if you want to learn more about Robert, you can pick up Erie, Florida, or you can listen to one of our earlier episodes of Into the Fray, where one of the first times we visited Shannon,
yep,
we got to talk about Robert.
Yeah, we covered Robert very early on, and we were, of course, very complimentary of Robert, as we all
always
should be and always do. So, yes.
Yeah, he gets to be all handsome and gets his television. Yeah, he's ready for his close-up, Mr. DeMille. It's awesome.
Pretty cool that you got to take him back up into that room, into the turret. That's pretty incredible, actually.
His handler, David Sloan, was there, and and the film crew, and I had to teach them all the rules. So yeah.
Wow.
But every time we rolled camera, I'm like, make sure you ask Robert if it's okay if we roll. Come on. We don't need, don't poke the bear. Come on.
Every cut, every time we cut and we start going again, you must ask. I mean, that's like taking Annabelle out of the case kind of a thing, you know?
It's like if you have a tiger on the set, you've got rules to follow, right?
Yeah.
And then every night, say goodnight to him, say goodbye, thank him for his time, break that connection, because otherwise bad things are going to happen.
Mm. Well, I didn't know that. That is amazing. Congrats on that.
Yeah, I'm super excited. So,
all right, well, hug Carrie for me. You guys travel safe, okay?
Yep, we will, and we'll hug the spiders for you too.
Yes, please.
Tell them all that you love them. So, all right,
I would appreciate.
Take care,
that.
Shannon. Always a pleasure. We miss you.
Miss you. Love you guys.
And see you on the other side.
Well, I'm so and so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little bark. Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. See how they play with this exam by the koans to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are.
Thank you.
says, when you settle down in the train, you can read your newspaper, and so on. You are not the same person who a little while ago left the platform. If you think you are linking your moments up in the chain. And this is what binds you to the wheel of birth and death. But when you know that every moment in which you are is the only moment, this comes into Zen. A master will say to somebody, now get up and walk across the room. And he comes back and he says, where are your footprints? They've gone. So where are you? Who are you? When we are asked who we are, we usually give a kind of recitation of a history.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.